are the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Well, let's just say the 6 o'clock news will never be the same again. The days of Walter Cronkite and three network channels has long passed. Well, journalism has morphed into news, opinion, and ideological rants, all passed off as unbiased, honest news. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. So your search continues for the Out Loud truth. I get it. Well, here it won't be just the news. It'll be how we discuss the news. A drive time show you can count on weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We call it Nozzle. World news, political talk, stories that impact your health. Honor our heroes, stories that'll inspire you. What you'll hear next is the heartbeat of the people. The hottest topics, the news stories that trend. It's time, friends, for a new stream of consciousness. It's Nozzle. Hours away until we see this big summit, North Korea, of course, Kim Jong-un, President Donald Trump. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. And will happen 9 a.m. Singapore time, but in just a few hours now, it'll be 9 p.m., roughly now, Eastern time. And if you know politicians, it'll probably start a little bit late. But in any event, that's the game plan here. The White House says that the discussions between the United States and North Korea are ongoing and have moved more quickly than expected. Now, that was an interesting statement to put out. And we understand there are some word that he may even leave Singapore on Tuesday evening. So we'll see how that works out. Lot to talk about here today on Nozzle, friends. I mean, it's a momentous event. These two world leaders facing off on the fate of this nuclear program. And the U.S. is demanding now total, complete, and irreversible denuclearization in exchange for a promise of economic assistance. Well, we're talking about economic assistance. Harry Dent is here. And Harry, let's talk about what that means, because North Korea is, I mean, it's at the bottom of the barrel. It's ground zero when it comes to a repressive society. And there is no economy really there. This could mean a great deal to the people, well, to the entire world, but certainly to the Korean Peninsula in Southeast Asia. Talk to us a moment on the economy, what you think, and how much is this an attraction to what the summit means, Harry, with Kim Jong-un? What's your take on that?
Well, you know, I have a hard time figuring it out, because the standard of living in North Korea, which is literally just hundreds of miles from the capital of South Korea, in Seoul,
right,
is like 1/20. I mean, it's like sub-Saharan Africa, there's no question that there'd be a huge opportunity for North Korea to be able to work more and integrate into South Korea to get a higher standard of living. But what are North Korea's people going to think of Kim Jong-un and his whole family's legacy when they realize they are so poor? I remember a story recently in the press. There was a North Korean that happened to get into South Korea for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Looked over and saw the dog food out. Somebody sent the dog. He said, "My God, that's for the dog?" He says, "Our people don't eat that good in North Korea." So I don't understand how you can explain. Of course it'd be good that Kim Jong-un could take his people. I mean, it's kind of like East Germany and West Germany, only much more extreme. East Germany was maybe half the GDP per capita is West Germany. And so it took many, many years of West Germany incorporating East Germany, investing in East Germany. In other words, it cost at first. It was a big burden. Mm-hmm. But in the end, it made Germany larger and stronger. And by bringing up those East Germans, it was a win-win in the long term, but it did take an investment. So I can see the interest of Kim Jong-un. I'm just like, how do you explain to your people when they've been shut off? They know nothing about South Korea.
Right.
They know nothing about the world. They think Jesus came down as Kim Jong-un saved them, and
right,
that they're so lucky. And right, how do they react when they realize, oh my God, South Korean people are living like kings and queens compared to us?
Now, that's an interesting point, Harry, because that is very fascinating. And it is one of the things we've kind of touched on a bit here, because, you know, you're right. The people don't know. I mean, Kim Jong-un is worried about his future, the regime future, his survival. This is what really is at stake here for him. And he knew the options were very limited when he got into this thing, very clearly, and which is why he was kind of forced to have this summit.
The question is, can he change in the way that the world wants him to change? It is interesting with his people and how he sells this to his people. Some of the reports we've been hearing is that, you know, there's even been talk about him being very, very worried about leaving the country for any reasonable amount of time because of a potential coup where they may take over the country. And this is another concern the leader has had, which kind of goes in line with what you're talking about. Once they find out they've been duped through the Kim family, I mean, this is... This goes back three generations now. He's the third leader of the grandfather and the father. And, I mean, the people may not be so happy, as you say. But, you know, on the other hand, if it can be pulled off, Harry, it could be unbelievable. It could be a mega opportunity for all of those people and for the world at large, for trading and for commerce and this, like you say, very repressive society there. Very interesting. So the bigger question really becomes the denuclearization. Is this real? And here's the deal I'm going to tell everybody up front here. Here's what we got to watch here. I'll tell you right now. I'll give you a prediction right up front here at the top of Nozzle. They will have an agreement coming out of Singapore. I can tell you this. There's going to be an agreement. And they'll claim success. That's my prediction here. The question is, will they follow through on it? You know, that's really got to be the question here, guys. Will they follow through on it? And that we don't really know. Historically, this guy hasn't followed through on anything. So that's going to be the problem. So let's put that aside a moment, Harry. We'll come back more to North Korea. You bring up an interesting point here, which is very, very real. Very, very real with Kim. How is he going to sell this to his people? Very interesting. Also, wow. So the president goes from one summit to the next summit. The summit he leaves in Canada... Amazing fireworks there. Many of us seen that press conference the president had just prior to him leaving for Singapore in Canada. And it was a very straightforward, straight shooting, which is what this president is, very provocative oftentimes. And he put it all out there. And of course, Trudeau had a lot to say about that once he left, and that created a bit of a battle and a war that's been playing out in the media. So there's that piece of it as well. We're going to talk a lot about this today on Nozzle, Harry, but give us your quick opinion up front about, I mean, in a summary version, what do you think about, number one, the president's press conference when he came out of that summit, the G7 summit, what was your sense of what he was delivering back here at home?
Well, you know, basically he and Kim Jong-un really have the same kind of bullying kind of strategy. What Donald does is just comes right out and punches people in the face, threatens them, gets them all scared. And then as soon as they make any conciliatory effort, then it's like the other way, like, this is one of the greatest leaders. He's here, our friend. And I tell you, Kim Jong-un, he outdid Trump. He threatened everybody, just throwing missiles in the air at random, even though there's no way he could win a war with anybody, and it lasts more than 20 seconds after he sets off the first missile aimed at somebody. Yeah. Look, he's got everybody, China, South Korea, and Trump kissing his ass, you know, saying, hey, let's meet with him. Donald has the same thing. And it's a good strategy and a bad strategy. I don't think it's the best strategy, but it can work, and it did work. Now Donald's all, you know, as soon as Kim Jong-un shows any response, he's like, oh, yeah, this is the greatest guy in the world.
I can't help but laugh, Harry.
That's what he's doing. This is the first phase of Europe. He wants everybody to know he's serious. We've got the hammer. The trade agreements don't favor us, is what he's saying, and I think that is overall true.
Right.
And we're going to want balance, and we'll be a wrecking ball if we don't get it.
And I want to talk to you. This is big now. I'm so excited to have you on here today, Harry, because I've been so wanting to have this conversation with you, because there's a lot of misnomers out there, number one, and a lot of people don't really understand what's at stake here, and there's a lot of bad information, which is why I was truly excited to say, okay, let's get Harry on today to hammer this thing, because we'll be on North Korea all week, we'll be on the IG report, we'll be on all this stuff happening, but I knew it was really going to be good to start the week with you. Also, Harry, there's another big thing. And what you just say, I want to get into all that trade stuff because we can learn a lot from you today on this thing. The other thing that I'm hearing, which it was kind of a head scratcher at first, but I'm sure you'll have a lot to say about it. They're saying brace for the world economy's most important week of the year. And there are multiple things that are laid out. Actually, I went to Bloomberg and got some of their thoughts that they had put out on this as to why this is. And I'm curious to discuss some of that with you and see if you agree that this is the most important week of the year. You know, sometimes the media does that and tries to sell something that maybe not be. But anyways, that's another topic today to cover. Also, Angela Merkel. Let's just say her and Donald Trump are not doing so well. Before the G7 summit, by the way, she urged Europe to step up in Trump's New World Order. She had a lot to say about it, actually. And I have some interesting things. I want to get Harry's take on that as well. It's very, very fascinating. Is this, again, protectionism? Is it isolationism, as they're trying to suggest? Or is it trying to balance the playing field? Which, by golly, Harry, you and I talked over the past few years about this playing field, and it's been a landmine. And that's why I'm curious to get your take on a lot of this. So listen, top of nozzle here, friends, today, and start the week off here. Harry Dent is here, and it's awesome to have you here, Harry, today. And I mean, you master this economy stuff. You have a lot of books out there, a lot of stuff going on. But to tell folks a little bit about your background, please.
Well, you know, I took the 80s after Harvard Business School and working with Fortune 100 companies, the Bain & Company, to really immerse myself. And I saw some real opportunities for economic research out of the logic of business strategies and consumer research, not typical economics. I came out with breakthrough new models for demographics and technology cycles in the late 80s and started making predictions like Japan's going to crash in the 90s and US and Europe are going to have the greatest decade ever. And that happened in spades, even more than I would have thought. And so I got known for that. And we've been predicting trends. I mean, we predicted the peaks of all the stock markets. We predicted the housing peak in late 2005, months before it started to go down with the subprime crisis, and a lot of major trends. Our problem now, Malcolm, is real simple.
Right.
Government took over the economy and the free market.
Right.
Over free markets,
right.
And special interests have taken over democracy, mm-hmm. And we don't have a natural economy. We can measure natural trends, project natural trends, when consumers are going to spend or not, when inflation is going to be high or low, and it has almost nothing to do with monetary policy, by the way, and neither does the economy.
Right.
But short term, when governments come in and say, we're going to print $15 trillion to offset a downturn, and now Trump comes in when corporate profits are the highest in all of history and wages have been going down for decades as a percentage of the economy, and gives the biggest tax increase, which went 90-some percent to businesses in the top 1% or even 10% that invest through stocks. So everything's to keep the bubble going, and the bubble benefits that top 1% and even 10% of the outlier. It doesn't help the everyday person much, and we just keep getting more dissatisfied people, and that, paradoxically, is how Trump got elected. He appealed right to the bottom 20 to 30% that are sucking wind in the last couple decades, no matter how high the stock market goes, whether the economy grows fast or slow, and it's been both. So this is a real dynamic time. We come to different conclusions about the economy because we have different indicators. Economists' indicators don't work. They're looking
right
at the tip of the iceberg, not below it. They're looking right at the symptoms, not the causes.
You know, Harry, it's interesting, and I hear everything you just said, and I like the way you put it out there just now, but, you know, a lot of our talks recently have been on this economy and the impending collapse that may happen. But here's the thing, and I bet you're already working on this. By the way, what was the name of your last book that just it wasn't out too long ago? It's a new one. Do you remember that?
Zero Hour.
Zero Hour, right. Okay, so perfect. Zero Hour. And it was really about the fact that we've got a, you know, basically he's saying it's coming to the altar moment of all this, it's all this debt we've been amassing over the, and this goes back through, my friends, and Harry will tell you this, Democratic and Republican administrations.
Oh, yeah.
The one thing about Harry, that if you don't know him today, friends, when you hear him talk, he doesn't care whether they have an R or a D behind their name. He calls everybody out for who they are, which is why I always like to have him on. He's really apolitical when it comes to that kind of crap. So that's what makes it kind of interesting to talk to you. But really, this whole economy thing, I'm almost wondering if your next book is going to be called Harry, the Trump Factor, because there are a lot of things within this Trump economy that is very, very interesting that might take off. But anyways, we'll have a lot to talk about today on Nozzle News, friends. And Harry Dent is here. We'll have more Nozzle in just a moment. The Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Can there be a future North Korea, do you think, where it is opened up economically, where you've got, like you say, Seoul, South Korea, the amazing economy in South Korea? Do you think there's a real possibility here for a new future for these people and for the world?
Well, I mean, that would require, I mean, not just on the United States part, but South Korea is not going to integrate with North Korea if they still got nukes and this guy still acts like a wild man that says, you know, I may just set one off for the hell of it. So that would make be a big step for Kim Jong-un, because this is where he got his power. This is Saddam Hussein sitting in little powerless Iraq, you know, promising the mother of all wars as if he even had a shot, which he did, and digging him out of a trash can. That is his reality. But you get power. But if you say, look, I'm crazy dictator, and I got, you know, weapons of mass destruction. Saddam Hussein didn't have a master point. You know what? He didn't dispute when our people said we did. He wanted us to think he had them because, oh, I'm a wild man, and if you mess with me, I'll just throw off some biochemical gases and kill a few million people in some Western or Israel or somewhere. Well, that's what Kim Jong-un did. He can't win a war. He'd be out in no time if he actually attacked anybody with just one nuclear warhead. He'd be toast so quick. He can't win that war. All he can do is say, you know, I'm a wild and crazy guy, and I got nukes, and I'm getting more of them, and I'm going to take somebody out if you mess with me. That works. That has gotten the U.S., Korea, and China all kissing up to him and saying, let's meet, let's meet. So, I mean, and again, it's the same thing Trump does. Trump goes right off and punches people in the nose, bloodies them up, let them know he's serious, and he can cause major harm, and then waits for a concession, and then Mr. Nice Guy. I mean, what did he say to Kim Jong-un? Oh, respected leader. Oh, yeah, great guy. You know, I mean, this is after calling him all these names. It's a way of negotiation. There are other ways. I mean, you could come at and say, well, here's the numbers and here's where it's unfair, so let's work on this. But Trump just, that's his way of doing business. But that's also Kim Jong-un. So they're a perfect.
Yeah, similar in that way. Yeah, no, that's interesting, Harry. Yeah,
just because there's so much alike.
Yeah, they are in that sense. And Trump came out. Remember, he also followed that up, Harry, with the fact he said, my nukes are bigger than yours and so on and so forth. It was really getting to be a child's game in many ways. But and it kind of plays to what you're saying, the art of the deal. I wonder if Kim has taken out a page or a chapter out of that book and playing it against Trump. You know, so I wonder if that's they say he's quite different than his father and his grandfather. And he's really a modern day megacon here. I don't know. What do you think? You think it's possible, Harry, right? I mean, it's possible he's taken a chapter out of that book. Maybe.
But it's possible. But the problem here is it takes a big move on all sides. There is no halfway mark that Kim Jong-un kind of gets to keep half of his weapons.
Right.
This is, I mean, for South Korea, the deal here
That
U.S. pulls its nukes out of South Korea and our military presence. And Kim Jong-un gives up his nukes, and in this case, it'd have to be very near entirely or on a very clear schedule. That's a big move because that is Kim Jong-un's power. But if he gets a strong enough ironclad agreement with South Korea, and somehow he gets economic aid to bring up North Korea, maybe first separate and then later when they come. I think the only deal that would work for Kim Jong-un is that he gets enough economic aid to bring up his country first, and technological aid, too, from South Korea and the United States. Bring up his people first to get at least halfway to South Korea and then try to integrate, too. Because, again, right now I just see too big a disconnect. People with 2,000 GDP per capita versus people with 40,000 GDP per capita I just the North Koreans are going to fall over and said, "I thought you were Jesus. I thought we were lucky people. These people are rich compared to
us."
That is too big a thing. So I think if I was Kim Jong-un, I'd be thinking, okay, how do I step up and then get to a level where I'm more like East Germany uniting with West Germany, like half the
exactly.
GDP. That's doable, but right. 20 times, you know, 1/20th of GDP per capita, I don't see how you
like you say, people. That's turning the lights on pretty quick here, man, you know, from a dark room to, oh, there's sunshine. And,
well, these people are told everything to do, how to get their hair cut, how to dress, blah, 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 can't do this. Women get abused by the men. I mean, it's a very archaic society. It is kind of like the Taliban or something.
Yeah.
So you couldn't incorporate the Taliban into Israel.
Yeah, right. No, it's a great example. I mean, we could, you're right. I mean, and we've never tried this. This has never been done before. Well, I mean, North Korea is, I mean, it's ground zero for, it's probably, if not the worst place on Earth, it's pretty close to it. I mean,
I'd rather be in sub-Saharan Africa dealing with their top-down. They totally control their people, totally keep them in the dark, no internet access. I mean, it is more repressive probably than anywhere.
Yeah, it's very repressive there. There's no doubt in my mind. And I've always said that about the North Korean people. I mean, sadly, they're the losers in all of this, really sadly about it. But all right, so listen, we're going to see what happens. You're right when you say, you know, the total denuclearization of the peninsula is going to take an awful lot, if that's even doable. And many people are questioning that. Now, Kim has never been of his word, so we got that to play with, of course. But the troops in South Korea, they say that's not a bargaining chip that they're willing to use. You bring up an interesting point when you say that. And I'm wondering if that's going to come in as a sticking point with Kim Jong-un. And I think, Harry, a lot of it's going to depend upon the relationship. You know, as you know darn well, Harry, a lot of this business in political circles is whether these leaders like each other or not. It's a lot of emotion. It's a lot of ego. This is just in every state. I mean, just across the board with leaders in general. If they like each other, like for instance, Harry, when President Trump met Xi Jinping very early on down in Mar-a-Lago, that was, I thought, ingenious. And he created this really interesting laying down the groundwork for a very interesting relationship with Xi Jinping in China. I also thought it was interesting the way he laid down the very interesting relationship with Shinzo Abe out of Japan, Harry. And I also thought it was very interesting the way he went to Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. I think the president strategically and very smartly laid down some really solid relationships in the first couple months of his administration, Harry. And I think those were pretty brilliant, don't you?
Well, okay, but here's the problem.
Right.
The people he gets along with are the dictator types: China, Putin, Kim Jong-un, Saudi Arabia. What did Saudi Arabia do? Just took the richest people, put them in a hotel trap and said, hey, you're gonna stay here till you give us 2/3 of your money or you get out.
Right.
I mean, how do you like them apples?
Right.
You know, how's he get along with Trudeau? How's he get along with Matt?
Right, but hold on. Now, all right. Here's the thing. What about this? The dictators, I mean, you know who they are, and when you say he's getting along with them, he's playing hardball with them. A lot of the partners you're talking about, they sort of are doing it with a smile as they sort of hit you in the back a little bit. At least the dictators are a bunch of you-know-what, and they'll tell you to their face what they think, or they'll threaten you accordingly.
Well, but also, when you get an agreement with them, they can just do it. I mean, a democracy has uprisings and parties and switches over.
So that's part of the reason, I think, Harry, but all right, let's talk about this G7 summit. Okay, so the president tweets, listen to this now, Harry. He tweets when he leaves Canada for Singapore. Exactly, you obviously, you didn't major in psychology, but you understand psychology really well, Harry. And the president leaves Canada and he says, the tweet, "I just left the G7 summit in beautiful Canada. Great meetings and relationships with the 6 country leaders, especially since they know I cannot allow them to apply large tariffs and strong barriers to ... Now, the president, the people who fault the president don't like his brashness and his outspokenness, Harry. I think a lot of our presidents have thought the same way Trump does. They just didn't speak to the American people and use Twitter as a megaphone to tell them what they thought. Listen, if Reagan had done that, if Bush had done that, if any of these guys had done that, I think it also have that they'd think Harry, in all fairness, they would think they're whacked out as well, because no president has ever shared their emotions, their feelings, or wore them on the sleeve like this president has. He uses Trump. Trump uses Twitter as a megaphone to all of his followers and the people and the country and the world at large. And the problem is, it's worked in the campaigns. It's worked here in the country with his MAGA movement. But will it work on the international stage with world leaders? This is a different animal, Harry. And I don't know the answer to this, if it's going to work or not long term. That's the difference, Harry, here, that he's using.
Yeah. But let me give you one insight, and I think Trump understands this. This is important. People don't get this.
Okay.
These countries, Europe, China, Korea, all of them, they need us more than we need them. We export 12% of our GDP, 12%. China's been anywhere from 30% to 50% at its height when their export machine was really rolling and they weren't focusing on their domestic economy. Germany exports near 50% of GDP. Most Western European countries, our allies, export 30, 40, 50% of their GDP if trade agreements collapse. In other words, we have more leverage here.
Mm-hmm.
If we have to say, okay, if you guys are not fair with us, and it is true that since World War II, we've been the good guys. You know, we put troops everywhere and help people with their defense. Why do we do this? These are all rich countries. They're not quite as rich as us, but they're nearly as rich. We're 50-some thousand GDP per capita. They're 40-some thousand. These are rich countries.
Exactly.
Why do we pay for their military? Trade. We, you know, I think there's imbalances both ways, but I think the imbalances clearly are not in our favor. So Trump is shaking that up. Now, he does have his style, but again, his style has got him.
It's worked so far. It's worked so far.
Worked for Kim Jong-un after all this battling back and forth. They're meeting, and I think, again, there may be some issues that are just too hard to resolve now, but I think they are going to like each other. I mean,
I do too. I do too.
And Kim Jong-un is not going to get along with Macron or Barack Obama or somebody, because they're not similar at all. So
he's going to like Trump and he's going to trust Trump. And that's the key to these kinds of relationships. You've got to have that. You've got to be able to look somebody in the eye and shake their hand and know they're at least of their word, or they're going to do what they say they're going to do. I think, and I've thought this all along, Harry, I think Kim is going to believe that Trump is believable. I think he's going to buy into him.
We're in a period of massive change. The Zero Hour book we just put out is the first book that we're not just talking about demographic and technology trends and geopolitical trends and things that you can help you see the future. And we're saying, look, we're at the end of a long and very bubbly boom, and those things do not end well. And central banks have taken over. They're putting it off with endless stimulus. But you can't take but so much of a drug without collapsing and going to detox. And that's every drug addict has learned that the hard way. We see one of the trends we say, we look at globalization. It only rose significantly in the late 1800s into World War One. And then you know what? It took a huge step back. World War One, the Great Depression, which saw nothing but trade tariffs and beggar thy neighbor sort of policies, because everybody, the pie was shrinking, and then everybody gets defensive. Mm-hmm. And then World War Two, this disrupted relationships. Globalization went from 30-some percent of global GDP down to 15. It collapsed. Well, I see this happening again. It has peaked recently, now double that at 60% of GDP. I think that this is the beginning of a trend. I think countries may find a way to patch some stuff and look like they're going to agree and balance out some tariffs, but the worse the economy gets, and that's what I see in the next several years, the more countries get in that mode. They did it in the Great Depression. Every economist will tell you this never works well in the end. It's a lose-lose game, but what I said earlier is important. The U.S. and Japan and Australia are countries that trade less as a percentage of their GDP than Europe, China, Korea, Taiwan, and all these East Asian countries. So I think that we're going to continue to see trade wars and trade problems, even if we come to some temporary agreements, because the economy affects that. And as we do, I hate to say it, it's like everything else in the world today. As much as the U.S. has printed money, as much as the U.S. has had a debt bubble, a financial asset bubble, and real estate bubble, and everything, and stock bubble, we're the best house in a bad neighborhood.
Absolutely.
We have as much money as Europe and Japan's off the charts. We haven't created anywhere near the debt that China's created since 2000. 64 times, by the way.
Is that right, Harry? China has, they created more debt than us even, huh?
About 18, 17 years. This is crazy. So when things melt down, the U.S. dollar is going to be stronger, as it was in 2008 in the meltdown, okay, not weaker. All the gold bugs say the U.S. dollar is going to go to zero and gold is going to go to 10. I see the opposite. I think gold's going to go down for a while. U.S. dollar is going to tend to go up. So we still kind of benefit from this.
I got to ask a couple of things you just mentioned to circle back here. You said a moment ago or a few moments ago about China. Have they created, you're saying they've created more debt for themselves than even we have?
Oh, here's what happens in China.
I didn't know that.
They're a third world country moving towards becoming a first world country. Their coastlines are already first world. 90% of their country is not. They're still emerging countries. Emerging countries do better by urbanizing. When you urbanize, people have better jobs, more specialization in labor. And I mean, literally, three times GDP per household when they're in an urban area versus a rice paddy.
Right.
So this is what China's been doing. China's just been doing it faster and in bigger volume than anybody else. And to do that, they're forcing it. Now, this is what I don't like about China. They're forcing it. They're pushing people into cities, and the way they can accommodate all these people coming into the cities, these rural people and workers, is to build stuff for nobody. They'll just say, look, we're a big country, we're urbanizing, we got growth in the future, growth in incomes, you know, growth in demographics, all this stuff. We're just going to build stuff to create jobs today and worry about. But that means they have excess capacity in steel, in aluminum, in cars, and they have empty condos, 27% in the large cities. Condos are just sitting empty. And then Chinese investors who believe in real estate and love real estate invest in those empty condos because they're going up and think they'll go up forever. This is not going to happen. Try buying empty condos or empty cities in the United States and thinking, you know, and make a lot of money. Only in China. It's because the Chinese government top-down rules. They don't make the loans. They just guarantee everybody's loans. And then the local communist parties get loans from banks, and then they hand out goodies to their buddy-buddy developers, crony capitalism,
right,
and they build all this stuff for nobody. And yeah, if a business overbills, then you have excess capacity, super high debt and overhead costs, and prices have to collapse. And that's what's going to happen in China. China has the greatest real estate bubble in the world, relatively, the greatest relatively.
Yeah,
that never ends well in history, and only a top-down government. If any other government had done that, they would have already blown up by now.
Well, you know,
so that's China's danger, that they can be so top-down, but then they can also overdo it.
Yeah, I like the way you explain that, because to me, Harry, I hadn't heard a lot of that before, and it levels the playing field a little bit more in my mind to what I realized or understood about China being a big player. And we have the biggest debt with China as far as, I'm talking about deficit in trade.
Trade deficit, yeah.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, they're the big lion's share of this whole thing. So very interesting. One of the real fast questions, and I've got to get to this trade thing to talk to you more about, but let me ask you something here. Historically, Harry, as you follow this stuff, you follow cycles like there's no tomorrow here, historically. And when you look at our greatest collapses over time here, before or any of them really, before we have that collapse in with the economic collapse, do you tend to find the economy humming along? Does the economy tend to go up before a collapse, or does it hold its own, or is it a slow decline, or is it typically a sharp decline? Because the economy, what's that?
It's a sharp decline, and this is what people don't get. People
sharp
are Harry, calling for a big crash and downturn. Everything looks fine.
Right.
I said, how did 1920, how did late 29 look in the United States? Everything was hunky-dory.
See, that's what I'm asking.
You know, low unemployment, you know, and the same thing.
All
1929
right.
for Japan. Economists were predicting Japan was going to become the number one country in the world.
Right.
Their baby boom was peaking. They had the greatest bubbles. They had bubbles like we have now in U.S., Europe, and China. In Japan was the only major country that had bubbles because their whole baby boom and their debt bubble came before us. I could see Japan's demographics are peaking out, so of course they look good at the top. And secondly, they have the greatest debt in real estate and stock bubbles in the world, and bubbles only crash. They go to their own.
So you're not surprised, Harry, that the can I say this to you, and you tell me if this is true, but you're not surprised, or are you, that the economy is really humming along pretty well. People are talking in a very positive note about the economic condition. That doesn't surprise you then?
No, it doesn't. There is a difference, though. In 99 to 2000, as we came into that peak, that was not the peak of the baby boom spending, but it was their strongest acceleration. Technologies were on a tear. Growth was 4% plus with falling interest rates and stuff. That was the best we'll ever see our economy.
Okay.
What's happened now after the 2007 peak, which was not as dramatic a bubble and crash, but you know, we had so much debt by then that we started to fall apart. So what's happened since then, we've been living purely on quantitative easing and now tax cuts on top of that.
Right.
The demographic trends have only pointed down since 2007. Mm-hmm. Technology trends have also slowed down. Mm-hmm. Productivity is down to 0.5%. It used to be 3-4% at best.
Okay.
And so this boom, because the stimulus has got us growing at 2%, and now tax cuts may take us to 3%, give or take.
Right.
This is artificial. This does not look as good as the top looked in Japan, which was totally natural trends, bubbly, but still was driven by good demographics and good technology. So this is different, but it's still, I don't expect the economy to look bad. It's suddenly, we're going to see a sudden turn. Suddenly, there's nobody left to hire and job growth goes down. And then the stock market says, how the hell are we going to?
But Harry, doesn't this, everything you're laying out right now, doesn't this also kind of, isn't this evidence toward why it's so important we do things like, I'm talking about the disruption of these trade deals that, I mean, Trump ran on this in the campaign in a big way as a businessman, and now he's out there doing what he said he was going to do. You know, the funny thing about this president is, Harry, like him, leave him, or love him, he does what he says he was going to do. I mean, he's a very unusual politician in that he doesn't just talk the rhetoric, he does it. So everything he talked about in the campaign that people thought he was out of his mind, he's actually doing, which really keeps people unglued and unsettled. And I'm just wondering, doesn't that make a lot of these trade, isn't this kind of some evidence? And wouldn't this help the situation of what you're talking about if we can start to turn some of these trade deals around and make them more positive to the United States? Wouldn't that be a good thing?
Well, that's part of the story.
Yeah.
And we do have the leverage there more than people understand. But the other part of the story is, it's hard to make change when things are just rolling along and hunky-dory and good. Look, I'm consulting to these same entrepreneurial clients and trying to make changes, and I have to do it step by step, fight the management, fight the board, fight the employee. As soon as the company starts to go into chaos and falls apart, then I'm dictator and I can make all those changes in 6 months. So there's also something to me which people aren't seeing. Yeah, his style in normal times would not be good. It's too disruptive. It's too bullying. It's too violent. In a time like this, where we're going to have to make changes much faster, and the system is going to have to break down anyway to reform and restructure, and that's the whole point of the Zero Hour book.
Right.
We cannot get from here to there. We have to break down. We have to restructure the world around common political and social and cultural values, because you got why do we have problems in Iraq? Because you got Sunnis, Kurds, and Shias in the same country. That's impossible. Mm-hmm. They hate each other more than they hate us as Westerners.
Yeah.
You can't do that. We got red and blue in this country. There is no common ground.
No common ground. That's right. That's right.
I'd like to see us form into two Americas or three Americas, blue and red, however, and then we just trade together, but we have allowed separate.
I can't believe you said that, Harry. I cannot believe you said what you just said. And, you know, it's funny, and I'm serious. I said the same thing last week, and I said it I don't even remember who was around me, and I think I might have even said it on radio, but I'm not positive. But I said the same thing you just said, and the way you just used the description in the Middle East in that way is a perfect scenario. You got Republicans here, you got Democrats, and you got patriots, people who really care about the country. I would fall into the latter. I don't consider myself a Republican or a Democrat for sure. But there are those who are patriots who are Americans who believe that we want to do the right things for the country, whatever that means. But that's interesting you say that out there. Very interesting. Listen, what we got to do here now is, this is really this is a great conversation, because you just said something else that was very interesting. And, you know, back to your book, Zero Hour, and what you've laid out, Harry, and where you're at. is truly amazing as you watch the trends and the cycles. You're a cycle guy. You watch these cycles, and people can say what they want, but you've looked historically at it. Trump is an unknown factor in all of this, and he is a total unknown factor. And as you say, he may be the right guy for the moment of time. Now, people are starting to say that, and I'm hearing that. That's like not the first time I've heard that in the past few weeks. He is very disruptive. He's a bit of a narcissist and a lot of other adjectives you can add to that, but he's a very interesting man for the times. And when you say we have leverage there more than most people would understand, I think that's what I want people to hear, what Harry says there about the trade deals, because everybody is right now pointing fingers at Trump and what is he doing and what is he doing to our allies. And here's the thing, people, our allies. So what does that mean? Does the word ally mean that you get to walk all over us? Does that mean that you can mistreat us? Is that like a sibling sort of affair that, well, you're our ally, so you can punch us in the gut, slap us in the head, and take advantage of us? And that's okay, because you're our ally. And I say that not to be a smart guy, but just look at the headlines today, people, in the media, and see what they're saying and what they're doing across the board, okay? And now you'll know what I mean by that. I don't think it gives an ally an excuse to do the kinds of things they're doing. And listen, what I want to talk about with Harry next, you talk about all these trade deficits and what have you, and you look at all of this, people. I mean, we're upside down backwards in these trade deals, and the numbers are not pretty. And we'll talk about that next, more nozzle in just a moment.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
President Trump is a disruptor. He's somebody who rocks the canoe. The reason I support that is I also am a canoe rocker. I tend to, because you have to do that. You can't, the status quo will get you in trouble. And if you procrastinate and you continue in that way, you're going to go down. You've got to reinvent, you've got to reinvigorate, you've got to reestablish yourself all the time, people. You're only as good as yesterday's victory and tomorrow's vision. That's really what it is. Harry Dent is here. We're talking about all of this here, from North Korea to the G7 summit and all of this. Okay, so the president puts out a series of tweets. I just want to hear these a moment here. He says this: fair trade is now to be called full trade. A fool's game, yeah, if it is not reciprocal. According to a Canada release, they make almost $100 billion in trade with the U.S. Guess they were bragging and got caught, he put in this tweet. Minimum is $17 billion. Tax dairy from us at 270%. Then Justin acts hurt when called out. This is Trudeau, of course, which, of course, is the prime minister. And he's a different animal. And as you know, Harry, he's a liberal socialist sort of kumbaya kind of guy, and the president, but you still got to deal with this guy. He is the prime minister of Canada. You got to be careful. And again, the president is some of his commentary here. He then says, Harry, after that, why should I, as president of the United States, allow countries to continue to make massive trade surpluses as they have for decades, while our farmers, workers, and taxpayers have such a big and unfair price to pay? Not fair to the people of America. $800 billion trade deficit. And the last one I want to read to you, Harry, he says, Germany pays 1% slowly. He puts slowly in parentheses, Harry. He's calling Angela out big time. They are feuding badly. Angela Merkel and President Trump, they are not liking each other at all. Germany pays 1% slowly of GDP towards NATO, while we pay 4% of a much larger GDP. Does anybody believe that makes sense? And this is what you said earlier, Harry. I'm going to call you out for what you said earlier and the support of this president's Trump's tweet. He then says, Harry, this: we protect Europe which is good, he says, in parentheses, at great financial loss to us, right? And then get unfairly clobbered on trade. Change is coming. And add to that the fact that the U.S. pays close to the entire cost of NATO, protecting many of these same countries that rip us off on trade. They pay only a fraction of the cost and laugh. The European Union has a $151 billion surplus. They should pay much more for military. Sorry, we cannot let our friends or enemies take advantage of us on trade anymore. We must put the American worker first. Now, Harry, I want to tell you something. I'm listening to all of this. I read everything. I understand. I digest everything. I hear you come through all of this. I got to tell you something, Harry Dent. I think President Trump has more than a point here or two. I think he's onto something here. And I think we've been taken advantage of, and none of this is helping out. You know, you say all the time to me over the years, you know, our leaders are fools. They don't know how to do this thing, and they're fools. You've said that so many times to me. Now we got a guy who is willing to, step out and do some stuff. What do you say about all that, Harry, what I just put out there?
Okay, now here's the big problem. There's no question we've been taken advantage of, but what we started it, and it happened a long time ago, I see it's similar to illegal immigration. We have not enforced this for so long, people aren't going to take it seriously and think we don't care and it's okay. Wow. And then we suddenly say it's not okay and it's a shock. Well, that's what's happening here. This stuff of us supporting other people's military, us letting having people have unfair trade deals, because again, after World War II, we came out of it strong and everybody else was damn near destroyed. You know, Japan and Europe were destroyed. They needed help. We gave them help. This has been going on since World War II. So our allies are like, well, why are you suddenly changing the rules here? We got along great. Of course we got along great, partially because we have common interests, but because you guys got all the good deals.
Exactly my point. Exactly.
And we're not happy with it. So I think that's the problem. This is a sudden shift with Trump coming in and just saying, this is the truth. And it is. It is true that we pay too big a share of military for other. It'd be one thing if we had some, poor countries, that were our allies. No, these are other rich countries, and we're paying way more than our fair share. And trade deals, even though we have some stacked in our favor, are more stacked in others' favors than us, and have been for a long time. So this does need to change. To me, the most change happens when the economy breaks down once a generation, like the 1970s or the 1930s, and now. And basically Trump, by coming in the way he is and just being brash and just saying, this is the way it is, and we got to change this, and we got to change it now, not over 20 years or something, is just accelerating it. I think this is going to happen anyway. He's like a catalyst to make this happen, because I say, what I kind of said earlier, I don't care what agreements we might make with Kim Jong-un today, or maybe we come back with Europe and Canada and come to some temporary, better agreements. I tell you, when the economy goes down, it's all going to fall apart. Wow. Because these countries are going to, we are the best house in a bad neighborhood. Japan has the worst demographics. Southern Europe and Germany and Austria have terrible demographics.
Yeah.
These countries have higher debt and quantitative easing and bond rates. I mean, our bonds are, now about 3% in a treasury bond. They still got bonds, Japan at zero yields for 10-year treasuries, Germany at 0.6%, Italy until they recently got whacked. They're bonds and they're bankrupt. Their private economy's bankrupt. Their government has the third highest debt ratios in the world publicly. They're bankrupt. And their bonds were yielding less than ours. This is crazy. That's because their markets are more distorted. So we're gonna come through this better,
right,
in these
right.
countries. That's going to cause some imbalances, but it's also going to give us more leverage. We already have the leverage that we don't rely on these other countries for exports as much as they rely on us. And then when our dollar's stronger in a crisis, and our unemployment's 15% and theirs is 25%, we're going to have more leverage too. We're the best house in a bad neighborhood. China, the economists like Japan in the late 80s were saying China's going to take over and become the number one country, even in U.S. dollars. I don't see that happening. I think China's going to go flat like Japan.
Wow.
Decade, wow. Not going to grow at all. because they've overbuilt for more than a decade ahead, and we're going to keep crawling through. So
very interesting.
I see China as number two for a long time. Ultimately, India is the up-and-coming country. But I see the U.S. still being number one in the world.
You know, and I've never heard anybody say that, Harry. You're the first one to say what you just said. That's got to be another book for you, too, because that's big what you just say there. And nobody is saying that. And because they're not considering all the other factors which you pointed out earlier in the show about China. And Japan, you're right, Japan has their a whole other set of problems here, including the fact that they're not having kids out there, and the population is aging so badly that they're worried about the future for Japan, period.
Japan, Southern Europe, and Central Europe are dying, and Eastern Europe, and Russia.
Right.
That's a big part of the world. And China, increasingly, are dying demographically. We go more sideways, as does Northern Europe and the UK and France. Everybody else in the developed world is going down, down, down. Because you're right, they're aging, the older people are aging, younger people are having fewer and fewer kids.
That's right.
And the worst economy gets, guess what, Malcolm? The fewer kids they'll have on top of
that. Oh, yeah. It's expensive, Harry. Kids are expensive. Yeah. And, you know, many people, you kind of lose your life a little bit in the process. Listen, I'm one of seven. There were seven when I was growing up as a kid, Harry. And none of the kids had seven. And the kids of that group, none of them had a lot of kids. Maybe they had one or two. You follow me? You know?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what you're saying there, more or less. All right, listen, before we run out of time, I want to ask you about economy's most important week of the year. Why is this the most important week is in relation to the economy?
Well, economically, it's not. Politically, is, because basically Trump's Achilles heel here is he walked into a bad situation. He didn't cause it. Even Barack Obama didn't cause the financial crisis. That was all built by Greenspan and the administration.
No, but Obama added a lot to it, though. He was not a help to what happened there.
Right. But Trump's fine line, see, the 2018 midterm elections, if the Democrats stand down, that's a victory for them, and that's going to Trump. Then if the economy collapses, which I think it's likely to do by the 2020 election, that tends to work against the party power. So Trump has to actually really show that he's turning things around, even in a bad environment. Again, when I was a turnaround manager, the company would keep going down for a while. But if I was showing I was cutting expenses and I was cutting out unprofitable markets and I was growing some markets, then the board would still and even the employees would still have confidence in me. So Trump's going to have to prove more than ever because he walked in. My thing, Malcolm, in 2016. I said if I was advising any of the politicians, I would tell them to wait to run for 2020 when things were in shit and
exactly.
You look like a hero.
Does he, right now, based on where we're headed, what's going on with all the factors, does he win in 2020?
Well, okay, first of all, he is coming up in the polls. He is making some progress.
Big time.
And even in these trade talks. Again, look at the stock market. I would have thought the stock market would be down after this weekend. No. They know what Trump's doing. They understand. He's blooding everybody up to get them to come back together with some concessions instead of, oh, no, this isn't fair sort of stuff. So I have to see how bad the economy goes.
All right.
Because governments are preventing this. This should have already happened.
Well, what you say makes a lot of sense there, Harry. This is number one. This is Trump's economy. Number two, they are figuring him out, and which is why they're not going. It's why they're not jumping off the cliff, as you said, and it's why the stock market is still holding its own and has been amazing. The growth in the market. I mean, even you've been surprised with some of the growth in that market, haven't you, Ben?
Oh yeah. I mean, my gosh, I would have never thought purely artificial stimulus. Now, I never thought.
Right.
Back years ago, we'd see $15 trillion and rising in QE. I mean, most economists would have said, they'll print $3 or $4 trillion and be done. No.
Right.
And tax cuts. And, of course, if tax cuts work to some degree here, the other countries are going to do that as well. So this is – I would have never thought you could have kept a bubble going this long because we do measure the fundamental trends. Geopolitically, things have gotten worse since 9/11. Mm-hmm. Demographically, in Europe, United States, and long before in Japan, demographic trends have gone the other way down. Technological trends peaked with the internet. Who the hell doesn't have a smartphone on broadband? You know,
That's right.
In the next wave of technologies, whether it be crypto or biotechnology or 3D printing or nanotech, those things are not even remotely in the mainstream yet to affect the economy. So we're in a difficult period. The only reason the stock market at new highs and the economy's even growing at 2% is because of this artificial stimulus. But you can't take a drug. If you can eat healthy food or you can take a drug to feel better. And if you take the drug, you're going to go down.
Well, it is a new world order. I know you would agree with me when I say that. It is a new world order. And as you already pointed out, Europe is in a lot of trouble. And when you see Merkel doing what she's doing, her days are numbered as chancellor of Germany. I think you would agree with that statement, don't you? Her days are numbered there. And
It's worse than that, Malcolm. Germany, I mean, everybody knows Italy, Greece, Portugal, Spain, those countries, Southern Europe, have very weak demographics, aging rapidly.
Yep.
People feel like Germany's right behind them. Germany's chart today looked like Japan's looked to me in 1989, which says they're going down. Yeah. If it weren't for their export machine, they would already be in the gutter.
For folks, I think you still have that free newsletter. Where do they get that? HarryDent.com?
Yeah, actually the best, that works, but it's best at economyandmarkets.com because that's really right about the newsletter. You just put in your email address there and you're on the newsletter, and that's a way to get to know us. It's a daily newsletter, mostly me, but also some of my other experts at Dent Research. And then, of course, there's the book, Zero Hour. This book, the social and political cycles, which are huge. I mean, it all goes all the way back to democracy, the advent of democracy itself. This is big stuff that's going to happen over the next several years, much more than just a garden variety depression or financial detox and deleveraging of the economy. This is already happening in spades, and Trump is right at the center of it. Trump, Brexit, all this stuff. I mean, it's right. That's just what's happening, and this is going to go much deeper.
Yeah. Harry, give us, as we close out here, give us your prediction.
I think within the next year or a little bit more, somewhere between late 2018 and late 2019, we are going to see a peak in stocks and in real estate shortly thereafter, and maybe before, since real estate is actually even more strained in places than stocks. I mean, crazy things are happening in bubble cities around the world. We're going to see a peak, and we are going to see a major downturn and crash. In other words, what started to happen in 2008 and didn't get to finish because of $15 trillion of free money printing and all this sort of stuff is going to finally have to happen. And it's good. We've got massive unproductive debt in the economies around the world. We need to take it out. It's zombie debt. But every deal that the ECB makes and the Federal Reserve makes and the governments make around the world is always to protect the banks because they don't want the banks to go under and cave like they did in the 30s, and it doesn't help the everyday person. If these banks would go under, we could flush this stuff out, and then we could turn around and grow just like we did. The Great Depression happened pretty much in 3 years, and we've been growing ever since. By late 2019, I'd say 50-50 between late 2018 and 19. If we don't see it by 2020, then I'm going to have to change my position.
Well, you said you're going to move somewhere. I don't know. We'll rewind that tape there. Well, listen, big thank you to Harry Dent, and you know how to get the newsletter, friends. And listen, something to think about here. You've seen this other award show they played yesterday here where Robert De Niro came out and was introducing Bruce Springsteen, and this was in the last 20 minutes of that show or so, and started using the F-bomb as he was talking about the president and so on and so forth. And of course, you got a standing ovation from the Hollywood elite. Friends, this does nothing. This is one of the dumbest business moves when these Hollywood elite end up. I can tell you what, Robert De Niro's career, if he had one at this point, is finished for sure, because he's just lost more than half of the support of the country. They're not going to go see his movies. They're not going to play to what he's selling. And this is what it is I've been telling Hollywood all along, is to chill a little bit, chill. You listen to Harry Dent and I talk here over the last hour, where you see that a lot of these problems have been here. Trump is the disruptor who's trying to fix it all. That makes the difference, people. That's what we're talking about here. Friends, one thing is certain, there's never a shortage of news. To be continued.